Today on Carly's Couch, we're speaking with Tyvette Simone, a self-taught mixed media artist who's inspired by her personal experiences with bipolar disorder.
Dun dun dun. Hey everybody. Happy Monday or whatever day
All the
it
listeners are
is.
like, oh shoot.
Here we go.
Let me tune into this one. Hi, welcome to Carly's Couch. I'm Lextopia. This is CeCe Fierce slash Carly Carpio. As you heard in the beginning, we have a special guest today. Is she the first guest for the year?
Great question, perhaps.
Look, either way, we're so excited to have you here. We're gonna let Carly introduce Tyvette because they are longtime friends, have a lot of history together. So, Carly, if you would introduce us.
Okay, so today we are speaking with Tyvette Simone, a self-taught mixed media artist based in Brooklyn, New York. She masters the use of natural materials such as crystals, taxidermy, tree bark, dirt, paper, mirror, and pressed flowers in her artwork. Each creation represents a reflection of different aspects of an emotion or principle based on their medium and her intention. She often explores the symptoms of mental illness intimately in her art. Tyvette aims to inspire and destigmatize the conversation around mental health through sharing her own personal experiences within the composition of her work.
Yay, welcome to the show. And then how do you know
So Tyvette is
Tyvette?
probably one of my oldest friends, definitely one of my favorite people in the whole world, but we became friends, yeah, for sure, in eighth grade. We are both new to public school in Oklahoma. Shout out to Jarman. And our last names were close to each other. So, like, we were always next to each other in line and we just started kicking in. So, we became best friends in eighth grade. And then she moved to Japan because she's a military brat. And we stayed friends. We have been phone friends for 25
Y'all phone
years.
friends.
Phone friends.
Yeah. I think I've seen
Sometimes
Carly
that
maybe
works like
six or
that.
seven times since middle school.
Yeah, I was about to say less than 10 for sure, probably.
Yeah.
Seeing each other? Yeah, in
Oh,
person.
nice.
Because
In
she lived
person.
in Japan, and then she's been living in New York ever since she moved back to the States. And yeah, it's just whenever we get to see each other.
Oh, cool. Well, lucky for you, you get to see her soon, and it's to celebrate her incredible art. Very meaningful, very impactful. Loved looking at the site. Tyvette, thank you for being here with us. As we get started, because I know people probably want to look you up, can you go ahead and say what your website is for the listeners?
Yeah, it's my name, Tyvette Simone with a Y. So TYVETTESYMONE.com at Instagram. That's my email. That's like, yep, just one
Everything.
name.
Look, good branding, good branding. So yeah, for all our listeners, you can check her out. Definitely want to make sure they get that at the top of the episode so they can see what you've been doing. So let's talk about just getting into art in general. Like, when did you become an artist?
I've always been a creative person. I took art in school. I was a theater nerd in school too. I wasn't really into sports. That was Carly. Carly was in sports. I was on the stage. But I started this particular medium type of art about 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. It's an interesting story. I really love telling this story, but I had started a meditation practice. And so I had this little altar, like a little table, and I had some sage on it, and I had a flower. It was a red amaryllis plant, and it was a bulb. So I would sit down every morning. I would light my sage. I would sage my space, and I had a mala. I would do a mala bead practice, and I would watch this plant. I would watch it grow. I would just stare at it, and I would notice it. It was dirt for a while, then a little bud came out, and stalk shot up. So that was a really beautiful experience for me. By the time it bloomed, I think it had three blooms on it, and one of them was kind of wilting and melting, and the other ones were perfect. And I was like, oh, like what's going on with my plant? Why does it look soggy on the side? And so I noticed that the sage was actually heating up the petals. And so I touched the petal and the pigment came off in my hand. And I was like, oh, that's wild. And so I had an art journal that I would doodle in, and I just ended up deconstructing the entire plant, and I made a piece of art out of it. And that's how it started. It was kind of given to me, this particular style of doing things, and it's evolved over time. But yeah, I'm not a painter. Like if you ask me to draw somebody's face or landscape, that's not the move. I'm making stuff, I'm making big weird stuff. It's not I use paint to maybe accentuate or maybe paint the edge so it doesn't look raggedy, but I'm not a painter. Definitely mixed media.
Wow. So I'm so glad you told this story. I think that's so cool. A, like, what a cool meditation practice. Because just to even think that, like, you're watching something grow, I think that's so cool. And then I also like how it's like, okay, with just the things around you, something happens and it's like you were just kind of inspired to just play with it. And for that to have grown into a very specific to you type of art form for the last 10 years is really cool. So I like that. I kind of want to copy that with the whole plant and the plant thing.
Do you have it? Fire. I was about to say,
I have it. You want to see it?
It's still alive?
No.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool.
I know our audio listeners won't be able to see it, but
so that's
yeah,
the original plant that you deconstructed that started your whole journey.
Oh, that is
wow. That's the one that's gonna be like 20 million.
Look. Yeah, right. This is gonna be like the Basquiat journal. Drawing,
yeah, cool.
Right?
Like, that's so cool.
Where'd that come from?
Yo, as long as we've been friends, I don't think I've ever asked you that story. And so I'm
oh, really?
Yeah, and I've never seen that. And if I have, I just didn't connect that that's what it was. Can you talk a little bit more about the materials that you use? Because they sound pretty specific, all like based in nature. Mm-hmm. Why the ones that you choose? Is there a spiritual meaning behind them? How are you inspired with them?
Yeah, I think I really am connected to nature. I like texture and I love depth in artwork. I don't really like flat. Like I love when something's protruding out. So like the crystals that I pick, the crystals each have their own individual metaphysical meaning. And so based on what the piece is, I'll pick a tourmaline or the pitolite or mica. I love using mica. Like for example, mica is a crystal that helps us to reflect on our flaws with compassion. And so like I feel like that's a really symbolic piece of like my work, really just downloading that compassionate energy into the canvas. I've been working with mirror lately, which has been kind of like playing off the show I'm having, the reflections of the human condition. The taxidermy has been an addition, I think, for the past maybe like 5 or 6 years. There's an interesting story about how I acquire the wings, but I love birds. I work with geese wing a lot. And I love geese because I feel like they're nature's superhero, personally, me. I think that it's cool because they can swim. And they can fly and they can walk on land. And that's like conquering all the elements, right? And also they have the community sense with them where one goose, if it goes down, if it gets hurt or if it's injured, another one will go down with it and leave the flock and stay with it until it dies or gets up. So it's like, it's also this feeling of like, you're never really alone. You know, there's always gonna be somebody there holding you down.
Mm-hmm. For those of you all listening or watching the video, you can see in the back kind of an example of when she's talking about the taxidermy using like the wings and the feathers. Because it's not just like feathers, it's like you got the whole body parts going on over there. And I'm sure this is like an age-old argument, like what makes art art, but it's always cool to have that intentionality behind it, like you're using everything for a reason or it has a specific meaning. When you talk about your art, do you like to let people just kind of figure out what they want to get out of stuff? Or do you really like to tell them like, this is what is going on here?
Only if they ask.
Okay. I wonder because I know a lot of artists, they like to be kind of like mysterious and it's like, you know, whatever you want it to be. But I'm like, I love going to the museum. You do too. Mm-hmm. I've been reading all the stuff like, look, hold on there.
Nah, you know, every other I like, because sometimes I feel like.
That makes it cooler.
Sometimes, of course, my point of view is important, right? I made it. Of course, it's the whole thing is about my point of view. But sometimes somebody will take something from a piece of art that could be close to my point of view or the opposite of my point of view, but it impacts them. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to take away from that, right? So I would prefer to say to people who are interested in my work, oh, what comes up for you when you look mm-hmm. at it? And then bounce off that conversation, right? Unless they directly ask me, like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I'm a what is that person. Yeah. I'm like, I don't think nothing. You tell me.
Yeah, like this one is actually it's a little preview for the show because no one's seen this one, I think. It's on the website, but you can't really see what's going
peek.
On. So this is actually on hinges and it moves. So it can lay flat. I don't know if you can see the depth in the and then it comes in.
Ooh.
So So ideally, there won't be something under it at the show, so people will be able to get in it and really experience it around them.
Oh, and I see, and it's using mirror as well, so you can see. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's super exciting. So she, if you're not watching the video, she was just showing us one of her upcoming pieces for Reflections of the Human Condition, which is her show later on this month, in which all the pieces explore a symbolic representation of symptoms from her personal journey with bipolar one. And as someone living with this illness, she hopes that her show shares a small glimpse of what it means to process all of the experiences that come with it. And so why this art show? Like, why now? Because this is your second solo exhibit.
The first one that's relevant to mental health, would you say?
Yeah, this is kind of like my coming out right now. The first show was more about my materials. So like the first show I had was called Harvest Moon. And so I had like large scale representation of the small materials that I was using. So I had like a big version of the crystal or a bigger version of the wings or things like that, just to explain to people what it was about. So this is me kind of giving a little bit more of myself vulnerably and saying, this is why I'm doing this way. This is why my mind is working this way.
And why now? If you've been an artist for 10 years, what is it about right now that you feel, I guess, comfortable, or maybe you don't feel as comfortable, but you know, to put this out there in that way?
Yeah, I feel really safe and I feel really confident and supported by my community. It feels appropriate. There's a lot going on in the world right now. I feel like there's a lot of people advocating for things that don't matter that much. And if I'm going to spend my time coming out of my shell and being someone that the public can look to as something that represents someone who represents something, I'd like to represent something that is intimate to me and the community of people that I seek counsel from. You know, I had a really intense episode in 2020 and 2019 leading up into COVID, and I've been stable for about 4 years now, so that's great. And I feel capable. I feel proud of my work. I like I said, I feel extremely supported, and it feels like it's the right time. You know?
Yeah, I like the way you described all of that, because it's like, I can feel like you feel capable, I feel safe, I feel supported. That's really strong. And I feel like that kind of rubs off. So it's like, yeah, we could do it. one thing though, I'm curious about, so you're okay, or do you want for bipolar to be associated with your name and your work? Like, you're okay with that? Like, for example, like if an actor, like they get typecast, for example, right? So do you have any worries about that, where you're like, oh, I don't want everybody to think everything is about this, or, you know, or are you inviting that and you're hoping that your work and your life and the things that you do are an educational experience for people?
Yeah, I feel like this is something I need to get off. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being a full-time advocate for a cause, but I am a multifaceted person. And this is an aspect of me that is a part of who I am as a person, the same way I'm a woman, the same way I'm a Black woman. I'm a mentally ill, bipolar one diagnosed Black woman. I'm also a businesswoman. I work in public relations. I work in interior design. I work in project management. I have my own business. I have a relationship. You know, I have a lot of friends who are also artists and creatives and poets and, you know, in the healing space. And so I don't have a problem with this being a part of that list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that it's fair to me to have to shame parts of my identity in order to be accepted or to be seen in the community.
And when you think about people coming to your show, people who might also be in the bipolar community and people who don't, what do you want them to walk away with after they see, you know, Reflections of the Human Condition and experience it, rather?
Yeah, I want them to walk away with a sense of awareness. I want them to walk away being able to recognize the symptom of it. I think there's a lot of stigma around personality disorders like schizophrenia, bipolar, BPD, which is borderline personality disorder, OCD, even things like autism. I think autism is more accepted than bipolar, but they're both brain conditions, you know? And we're willing to accept one behavior, but not another, right? Because one is more radical, one is more timid. Yeah, that's what I think.
Are you scared at all about the show, presenting your art and it being connected to mental health as well?
Well, how many, can I ask you a question? Just to kind of, because I feel like we're entering into a vulnerable space even in this conversation, right? So let me ask you, why would I be scared?
Because of vulnerability. I would think like, oh, is it scary? Honestly, like as an artist, period, right? So I'm honestly not even thinking about fully just the mental health part. A lot of the artists that I know personally, it's like, I don't know, it's like they're scared and like they put their stuff out there and it's like, I want to kind of hide away from it. Apparently maybe you're totally different too. And then for it to now open up for, oh, people that, you know, are probably gonna ask me all these questions or they want to know things about my past or my experiences, it from that kind of space, that's not scary to you?
It is scary. I guess I was curious why you asked the question around fear, right? Because I was associating it with the stigmas around mental health. So I was wondering if you were like, oh, were you scared to tell people that you're crazy? You know what I mean? Like,
well, look, you said crazy, not me.
That's part of the stigma, though. That's part of the stigma. You know, it's just like, oh, you know, I've had people tell me you'll never get a real job if you tell people that you're mentally ill. You know, people won't be able to trust you or you know, you'll never be able to have a bad day and someone not bring that up, right? And, you know, and it's just, I think I've gotten to a point in my life where, to be quite frank, I don't care. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Like there's so many people struggling with this, not getting support. And as someone who has been in psychosis, who has been delusional, who has been manic, it is way scarier to be in that situation than to come out of it and worry about someone else who will never experience an opinion about it. You're not, you know what I'm saying? Like, I rebuke that fear at this point, right? And I still feel the timidness, you know, like I have people in my professional life who are like, hey, let me get the invite for your show. And I'm like, ooh, it's got bipolar information on it. Okay. You know, whatever.
That's like when people follow you on Twitter and you be like,
Yeah, and then they're like reading little snippets and they're like, oh, she's bipolar now. What's that like? And I think that a lot of people might know people who are bipolar or have a mental illness and they don't even know.
A lot of people.
And I'll say, to just to circle back too, one of the things that I want people to really take away from this show as far as the awareness is concerned is just recognizing it, because people in my life, when I was going through this, they didn't even know what was going on. They didn't know. They had no idea. They were just like, oh yeah, she's amped, or like, she's on one, or like, oh, she disappeared. Like, where'd she go? Or, you know, it just even my partner had no idea what was going on. My family, like I had a couple family members who were like, oh, is she going through like an episode or something like that? You know, like, and I think that the more regular it can become to recognize that, the same way if you saw someone having a seizure in a grocery store, the same way if you watch somebody get hit by a car and you just, oh, that person is hurt or that person is having an experience right now, we should get them help, you know, not, oh no, what's going on, like the person's being weird, or at least having a little bit more compassion for it.
You know what, I love how you turn that back around on me, because as you speak, I say, you know what, actually bipolar one, a few of the other ones that you mentioned earlier, that's scary to me. And so to be honest, it's like, oh yeah, I'm worried, like, aren't you scared? Because even to see people during particular times and going through things, I know some people who sometimes they just like go off, or it's like, what's going on? That's so scary, because it feels like out of control, and it feels just like, I don't know how to react, or like, what are we to do here? So I love that you did that, because this is going to be good then for awareness, because like, even right now, like I get to learn like, oh, okay, like what's really going on, and how can people even better have conversations with you about it? And how can people have a better understanding about it? Any of the things that have to do with like altering somebody's idea of what's going on or reality, that's so scary. To me,
yeah, I think,
because you a superhero,
I think it's scary to most people. You know, I feel like the difference between like a seizure versus, you know, a psychosis, right? People feel like, oh, you can't control that. You can't control your seizure, but I can't control this either. I can do the same treatment everyone else does. I can eat right, I can drink my water, I can take my medication, but that doesn't guarantee me the same life as everybody else because I have this condition in my mind, right? And I think there's so many lessons and so many struggles and so many things to be said about everyone's mental capacity, right? You could be having a couple too many drinks and you feel out of control. The next day you're like, oh, what did I do? You know, like, I don't ever want to get to that space. So I'm not going to drink that much anymore, right? And you can kind of control that, or you can have an insecurity and say like, you know, oh, I don't like the way, you know, my clothes look, so I can go buy new clothes and feel better. This isn't changing. This is who I am as a person, right? And I don't take for granted every day that I'm in euthymia that I could be depressed again, I could be manic again, I could go off the edge, right? But it's like, it's a conversation. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even trying to make the declarative statements because everyone's experience with this is different. The same way every Black person's experience is different. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm not gonna come in here and just say, this is what all the people who are bipolar go through. This is our movement. This is what we sound like. This is what we look like. This is what I sound like. This is what I look like. This is how I move. And as someone in the space, it would be helpful if you guys understood at least what it looks like to be in this space, right?
Yeah, I think that's so important. And so often when there's things that people don't understand or trauma that people go through every day, it can almost seem like kind of scary to share because it makes them seem less than. But I would say it also, like you said, kind of makes them a superhero. The fact that you're out here being an artist, being a partner, being a great friend, being a businesswoman, being all these things and living with that and having lived through that experience. I mean, and also being vulnerable and willing enough to share it and help educate people. Like, I think that that's so important. And as your friend and as someone who did not know what was going on, had no idea, didn't know, I think it's so important to have these conversations. And that's a big reason why, in addition to your amazing art, why I wanted you on the podcast, because it's so important. Like, and I want to ground in a definition of bipolar disorder because I didn't know what it was. And so bipolar disorder is a brain disorder that causes unusual shifts in a person's mood, energy, and ability to function. Different from the normal ups and downs that everyone goes through, the symptoms of bipolar disorder are severe, ranging from very extreme highs, so mania or manic episodes, to very low lows, depression or depressive episodes. So a person who has bipolar disorder also experiences changes in their energy, thinking, behavior, and sleep. And during bipolar mood episodes, it is difficult to carry out day-to-day tasks, go to work, go to school, and maintain relationships.
Like, it's not anything you can necessarily take to change it.
No, you can't. You can. I mean, I take medication, and it tapers me, right? There have been times when I was not taking medication, and there's no taper. Some people have to take multiple medications. Some people have been trying to figure out what medications work for them for years. It's even recent that these medications have been available. So back in the day, give 100 years ago, you would get a lobotomy and get institutionalized immediately. And they're just like, that's it. You can't beat with society. Because
I watched a lot of period pieces. And I saw that recently where the guy was saying like he was seeing stuff, and they took him to the place. And then they came back to visit him, and like they shaved half his head, and he had a scar, and he was just numb. He was just numb. And I was like, ooh, they really thought they knew what they was doing.
They did that as recently as the 60s, though, too, because one of the Kennedy's daughter, like she had something, and after that, she was
knew what they was doing.
I was reading a story, and I was like, that's why when people think like, oh, it was way back then, that was the Victorian era. No, that's the 1950s and 60s.
But Carly, so if you guys have been friends for so, so long, then, and you said, oh, I didn't really know what was going on. Did you know what was going on for a time? When were you diagnosed? Carly, was it as a kid or was it older?
I feel like Carly's about to learn some things about me that she doesn't even know. She's going to be like, what? I got diagnosed when I was 19.
Okay.
I'm 34 now. So I've been living with my diagnosis for 15 years. I was in denial about that diagnosis on and off for the first 10 years. Wow. So I initially took medication. I didn't like the way it made me feel. I was very much feeling dull and not as shiny and vibrant. And I can, in hindsight now, recognize that as part of maybe like the mania, right? I was craving and romanticizing that part of the illness because it feels good, to an extent. And I stopped taking it. And then I just continued to live my life. And I have all types of wild stories about things I've done and the audacity I've had and the things I cared not about and just live my life. And I also, interestingly enough, kind of adapted to a lifestyle that would support me not being medicated. So I was like working in restaurants. So it didn't matter if I was staying up until 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, because that's what happens when you work nightlife, right? When I turned, I think maybe 25 or 26, I started to have severe symptoms of psychosis and delusions. I was hearing things, having auditory hallucinations, and I got scared. I didn't recognize what was going on at first for a few months, and needed anyone around me. And then I started to remember that I had this diagnosis. I was just that in denial about it. I just forgot about it. I was like, that's not true. That's just something else that's going on. I also experienced childhood domestic violence. So I had this argument with myself about, well, am I crazy or do I have PTSD? Or is it, you know, is my family upbringing was bad, or is it me, right? Is it my brain, or is it, you know, my circumstances? So I had a lot of this back and forth. I tried to deal with things in a holistic way. And some things can be dealt with in a holistic way. For me, this is not one of those things, right? So I went on medication again. I was on the medication for about maybe three and a half, four years. And I was really stable. I got jobs that I had never even aimed to get. I was like working corporate America and taking salary, and I had benefits. And I was like, oh, look at me, I'm growing up now. And I was in therapy, and I was like, wow, I'm doing so good. I must not have bipolar disorder anymore. Which is a huge myth. It doesn't go away. Just because you're stable doesn't mean that you're not bipolar anymore. But naively, I decided to wean off the medication, and stress is a huge trigger for some of the symptoms. And so I happened to have an extremely stressful year leading into COVID, as I know most of us did. And not being on my medication in combination with extreme stress led me into a wild episode that lasted for about a year. And I had become so disconnected from my reality that I forgot what medication I even took. Mm-hmm. I forgot who my care team was. I forgot who my friends were. I forgot, you know, just who I was as a person. I became a different person. And it wasn't until a family member made that call and was like, y'all need to go get her, that I finally was able to get some rest and get the care I needed and get the medication I needed. And then I was like, oh, and I'm looking at this like forest fire attached to my sneaker, you know, and I'm just like, okay. So it was at that moment, I would say probably in August of 2020, that I finally accepted my diagnosis. And I've adhered to my medication. I adhered to my care team schedule. I got back in therapy. I told everyone that I knew who had experienced me when I was unwell, what was going on. Some people understood. Some people did not care. You know, that's fine. Everybody's reasons and seasons, you know, no hard feelings. But yeah, it wasn't until I could fully accept the diagnosis and unfortunately, I needed that proof, right? Oh, show me, I need this. Show me this is true. So God was like, okay.
You ran the tape back on you.
We're going to show you that you need to take this seriously. It's not going to get better, right? So it took all that for me to finally take it seriously. But my life has been really beautifully unfolding since then, because I feel like now that I have released the shame around needing this type of assistance in my life, that I can actually get the treatment I need that will empower me to live a healthy lifestyle with this disability.
I like that. And then can you talk about what an episode looks and feels like, perhaps for you, because again, it might not be the same for everybody, but also with the intent of, is this something that we can help identify and or like be able, if we have a friend or somebody, like what will we look for that might lead to that conversation?
Yeah, I think on the common, more common end of things, I think that depression is definitely a symptom of bipolar disorder. When someone is manic, or at least when I'm, no, I would say this probably everybody. When you go up, you have to come down. So I think that some people just experience depression only, but you won't experience mania if you're not bipolar, right? But mania looks like not sleeping for 2 hours, and then, you know, having a full day and sleeping another 2 hours and feeling great, talking at rapid speeds, investing, spending money, spending just ungodly amounts of money on hobbies or things that all of a sudden are a fixation, right? Like, I bought a theremin when I was manic and an amp. Do you even know what that is?
Mm-mm.
A theremin is a musical instrument that you play without touching it. So it has these two metal poles on it and an antenna, and you put your hands in it and it goes woo, 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 and it makes these like kind of trap Halloween sounds.
Just
right?
being random.
But anyway, just random. And I was obsessed. I'm like, I'm starting a band and I'm going to take lessons. And I reached out to Moog and I was like trying to get a sponsorship, you know, and it's just, that's something that I wasn't even interested in doing and like ever, right? It just became an obsession. Sexual promiscuity is also a symptom. If you have someone who's all of a sudden, you know, really heightened in that area and expressing themselves away, that could be a symptom.
It almost seems like a heightened need to, does it feel like just I need to find a rush somewhere, like endorphins or dopamine, or totally, it's totally different.
You're not even looking for it though, because it's already happening.
You're already in.
You know, like something. I'm not like, oh, I need some coke right now or something to get this off. It's like I'm acting like I'm on it. Something, yeah. Right? But you're not. You just feel this heightened sense. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll even say your pupils will dilate when you're in the mania. Mm-hmm. Which I've experienced before. I've got pictures of myself and I'm like, oh, my eyes look weird in that picture. Then it evolves into different symptoms. You could have a mixed episode where you're manic and you're depressed at the same time. So that could look like you could be depressed, but you're having rapid speech.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a little bit of both, right? Then you could have the feeling of suicidal ideation where you're thinking about hurting yourself. Thinking about committing, you know, suicide, and fantasizing, even maybe romanticizing it. And it's something that you hear all the time. You could have hallucinations. You could see things. You could smell things that aren't there. You could, seriously hear voices in their head, right? Delusions where you think that you're a superhero or you think that you're God, not in the Dr. Umar way, but like in the real way, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're just like, no, I'm God. Like y'all need to get in line because I'm God. And you know, that's also like a symptom of psychosis, which is when you just completely break from reality. And so now whatever's going on in real life is not happening in my mind, and the way that it's transferring to others, it doesn't make sense, right? It wouldn't even make sense. So it's weird. It's a little weird, right? Like to describe it, because I feel like people really casually will say stuff like, oh, you're acting bipolar, you're acting really manic, or like da da da. And I'm like, that's not it. That's the same as using the R word. You know what I'm saying? Like to describe somebody's personality that you don't like. And it's just like, no, somebody's whole situation, right? That's not the word to use.
Yeah. As you're telling these stories, it's interesting because it's almost like, okay, taking medication, you might have. It's like might feel like it dulls part of your full experience. And it almost feels like it's like kind of unfortunate. It's like, do you feel like you can't really be who you are? And yet with that to the side, it's also like, but in this society, you can't fully, it's like you can't fully be who you are because it damages, I'm sure, relationships, thinking about romance and like a job, all of those things. If you were to like, just let it be. But do you feel like you hinder yourself at all? Or maybe not hinder is the right word, but like that you have to level yourself down to be with people?
I guess at that point, right, we're we're having to draw a baseline for what is normal. The question, I guess, people, or in my experience that I've had with my own personality, I guess you could say, is who is me, right? Who am I? Am I the person who gets to these states because that's me with no assistance, right? Or is me, am I the person that you're talking to right now who's for the most part pretty clear and like, you know, just here having a conversation, nothing's wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, because you're right. Because I guess it's almost like I'm asking, like, who would you rather be?
Because also, you know, it's the society we live in. Because if you go to an indigenous culture, you know, people who have this mental illness are revered as shamans. Yep. They're revered as healers, you know, and they have the elders mm-hmm. and the other shamans that will take them into the woods or into that sacred space and teach them how to deal with these gifts and deal with the symptoms, or, you know, however, because as I'm saying, like, even the language, right? Oh, the symptoms, the gifts, like, there's mm-hmm. so many mm-hmm. different ways to look at it, right? You know, you could look at a child that grew up with the perfect circumstances, and you can look at a child that has, the perfect growing up circumstances, and you can look at someone who grew up with trauma, right? And then it's like, well, who would that person be if they had this life as an alternative? And who would this person be if they had this life as an alternative? But then who's to say they didn't have to have that experience to be the person that they are?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we're in a space in society where we can even have these conversations, because mm-hmm. we were talking about people getting lobotomies for hallucinating or whatever's going on. And so my question is, for being that friend who didn't know what was going on and didn't know how to support you or how to support anybody, if people do see these behaviors, like they might be manic or they notice their friend is stuck in something, like how can we support someone who either we know has bipolar disorder or like we might suspect that something is going on, like something other than them like having an attitude switch or a bad day, but like we start to notice symptoms?
Yeah, it depends. It really depends on the person. I think that definitely, even in my support groups, one thing that I find that people have agreed on is that when I'm in a good space, that's the time to ask me mm-hmm. what I would need from you when I'm in a bad space, right? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, if I'm already in the bad space and we haven't had that conversation, it's like, what can I do for you? A couple of things that I can think of that are like big no-nos. Don't encourage or exacerbate the behavior, right? So if I'm having a delusion or I'm hallucinating and I'm like, do you see these wings, you know, these angels above our heads and they're flying and I'm speaking in this thing, don't egg it on. You don't have to disagree with it, but don't egg it on. I feel like one thing that happened a lot was that people were egging on the things that were not real for me, or they were entertained by them. And it further confirmed in my mind that was what was real, right? So that, I'd say that's the biggest thing. If you see someone experiencing psychosis or delusions of grandeur and they think something that you know is not real or doesn't make sense, don't egg them on. It's not fair. It's not fair. If your friend is manic and you notice they haven't slept and you're over their house, make them a cup of chamomile tea, you know, maybe ask them if they want to stretch with you. And it's suggestive, because ultimately this person is going to help themselves. It's just the truth. And as a care team or a support system, you'll also have to have a boundary as far as, you know, at what point is this no longer something that a friend should be dealing with, and we need to invite a professional in. If your friend is talking about hurting themselves, hurting others, or not wanting to be here on this plane with us, very carefully, I may advise that you might need to elicit the help of a professional, not necessarily the police, but, you know, EMS services, counseling services, psychiatric services. You know, one of the most painful things that I would say happened for me was the betrayal that I felt when my family called someone to come and get me, right? But I needed it. I needed it. Did they control where I went? No. Did they, you know, were they there during that time? No, they couldn't even come visit. It was COVID, right? I'd had no visitors while I was there. But I needed it. And I think it takes a really brave moment to just recognize when something is way beyond your scope of support and to call a professional. The best thing you could do if you find yourself in that situation, I think, would be to just check out the options, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe try to find a hospital that you know has a good facility and reputable doctors, and you know, know what the laws are in the state. If they put you on a hold, yeah. How many days before you have to leave? What's the next set of days before you have to leave? You know, ask, you know, calling that person while they're in the hospital. They usually take your phone. I know, like in New York, they take your phone away. You don't have your phone while you're there. You have to write your friend's numbers down. Call them from the payphone, not the payphone, the house phone, I guess, in the hospital. So just checking on them, you know, being there for them. I think if you can't do something during the episode, the best time to support is really after, because that person's going to be dealing with a lot of shame, a lot of regret, possibly memory, not remembering things that happened, you know, and really having to piece their life back together in a way that only a small few understand what it looks like to have to piece your life together after something like that, right? So, like I said, just continuing this conversation and just saying compassion, you know, compassion and knowing when you can help and knowing when it's out of your scope, and, you know, really just kind of recognizing that it's not you. It's not you. Like, there's nothing you could do to change it or stop it or make it better, or you can make it a little better, you can make it a little worse, but like, ultimately, having that detached place of just saying, like, you know, this person is having an experience that's unique to them, and I want to support them, but I'm not going to take it personal how they're talking to me, how they're behaving around me, right? I understand that they're in a state right now that is not their typical self.
How can people learn more? What would you recommend as good ways to learn more, to research this area?
Yeah, there's two resources I'd love to share. IBF, the International Bipolar Foundation, we've actually partnered for my art show. So they're going to be providing educational resources, and they're going to be doing a live stream of the artist talk at the show. They've got a lot of really great resources for caretakers, family members, partners, and people who are dealing with bipolar disorder. Also, NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental mm-hmm. Illness, they have different chapters in different states. So they have, like, you know, different support groups, they've got advocacy programs, they've got a lot of education. And I believe most of the I think a requirement to be a volunteer for them is you do have to have a mental disorder. You can't just come in and say, oh, I'm an advocate for the people. So everyone who's volunteering with that organization, I believe, that might not be true, just double check me, right? But like, I'm pretty sure you have to, you know, hold it down to be able to hold it down. So
now show me. Yeah. I know them interviews as well.
My last question before we go to our shout outs are, what are some things that you wish people understood about people who have bipolar disorder?
We can lead full healthy lives. We can lead full healthy lives. And we may need to take breaks, and we may need to have time to ourselves to rest and to recuperate and to deal with our own processes. But it's not something that needs to be feared. I feel like don't be scared if someone says to you, I have schizophrenia or I have bipolar disorder. Have compassion. And because I also think that the first thing that comes to people's mind when they hear that is how it affects them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're not wrong.
And that's not fair. That's not fair to us, right? So I would take that with a grain of salt. You know, like when someone reveals something to you, if you're only thinking about how their moment or their issue or their illness affects you, you might not need to be their friend. You might need to, you know, you might need to check yourself before you advise or try to support or help that person, because it's not about you.
Ultimately, that's good.
You know, like, it's not about you. It's like, yeah. You need to have the compassion and the understanding and the education to deal with it. But ultimately, like, how you feel about it, it doesn't serve us to know that you're scared of us or that you're, you know, you're judging us. We're trying to deal with it.
That's a remember in a lot of situations. Like when you're talking to people in general, are you thinking about them or yourself? I like that a lot. Thank you so much, Tyvette, for joining us, for being able to have this
conversation. Yeah, thank you for having
I learned
me.
a lot. And I like hearing, like, you know, the stories of like the different things that you would consider the ups and downs, because all of it is a journey. And it sounds like you are able to do all the things that you enjoy doing, one of which is creating awesome art pieces. So please put out there to the world the information for your show, any of the other work that you're doing, your businesses, anything that you want to shout out to folks. You can put that out there now.
And how they can support you. So do you mm-hmm. want them to register, to follow, to share, to whatever?
Okay, let's see. So I'm having a show in March. Oh, it's March, we're here. It's gonna be from the 28th through the 31st, which is Easter weekend. The exhibit is open from 1 to 9 p.m. each day. It's at Seven House Gallery, which is in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. There will be a reception and an artist talk on the 30th of March, which is World Bipolar Day. We'll have a little alcohol and non-alcoholic beverages because everybody's, you know, in a little mix. If you like the RSVP for that talk, it's not required, but you can find the link in my bio on my Instagram page at Tyvette Simone. I guess also a shout out to New Visionary Magazine. Actually, they just did a write up about me for their winter issue in January
awesome.
That just came out. There's a lot of really great mixed media artists in there to check out.
And we will be sure to share the link to Tyvette's social media, to the Eventbrite. So if y'all are in Brooklyn, come, or in New York in general, come through. Mm-hmm. And then also to the International Bipolar Foundation and NAMI resources that she shared with us.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then good luck on the show. Hope everything turns out
Thank
really
you.
Well. If this interview is any indication, like, your artist talk is going to be incredible.
Thanks.
So I know that's going to be really cool. You're there on the 30th for sure.
I'll be there every day.
Okay, now, that's right.
You can make an appointment if you like to go through the show with me one-on-one, and I'll just meet you at the gallery and we can walk through and we can talk about it. I mean, it's a really interactive experience. Like, I have this 150 song playlist, and all the songs have to do with mental illness and the symptoms of mental illness and how they reflect to me. And there's rock, there's rap, there's soul, there's like all these different things, you know. So you could walk in and there's like mooning and crooning happening, and then you walk in 20 minutes later and somebody's screaming at the top of their lungs, right? So it's a fully immersed experience. There's education, there's the art, there's the music. And then there's me, and I'll be there if you want to talk about it.
And I'll be there too. So meet me there.
Thank you so much. Hopefully, I know anybody listening to this episode has learned a lot. And then for the listeners, before we wrap it up, if you do have any experiences with bipolar or other mental health issues or anything that you want to share or talk about, feel free to hit us at carlyscouch.com and on Instagram and Twitter and everything else. Definitely, I would say this is a great episode to share.
Please.
So share this episode with others who may need it or have interest in it. And please support Tyvette. Thanks for listening, as always.
We'll see y'all next week.